guys, I don't really feel like being a team player.
Why do I have to be the team player?
I don't want to. Why do I got to be the team player?
All right, this
has to go.
This has to go.
Where are you going to put it?
Director Fallon for Gundy.
Did you? Wait, Gundy's did nuts. You say 48? Cody, why did you initially watch this? I was very surprised to hear you go, I started this Jesus documentary and it was so good. That's what you said.
Are we rolling?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Good, because I've been saving the good stuff.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
It's a cloudy, sad, misty day, and no one's going to have anything good to say to
this. This is going
to
be a bad one.
No, I have some good
so I would say tune out now. Change the channel while you can. You're never going to get this hour back.
If you want to listen to something less depressing, turn on the news or something.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a bad start.
Just ask a simple question. Jeez.
I don't know, because I look good, Mike. I don't know what to tell you.
Why'd I put it on? I was bored.
Can we start that over again?
All of our podcasts start like 2 or 3 minutes of stuff like that, where we're just getting out all the sillies and the stupidness.
Yeah. We never get out the sillies.
You mean the whole episode is just us getting out the silliness.
But it makes me feel closer to you guys.
Get your crunches out. No, I need you to do.
Well, there's still half a bag, so we're going to be crunching for a while.
Actually, they're not really... You're doing a pretty good job.
I'm not trying to do one way or the other. It is what it is.
Here. We're talking about the Kanye trilogy. Is it really a trilogy? Is it just a long documentary that they, for some reason, made three episodes?
It's a little bit of a trilogy. Actually, it's kind of like a two-parter.
Do episodes matter when you're streaming? Shouldn't it just be one long thing and then you can just pause it?
You gotta, like, sit down for what you're willing to commit to. And a three-part series that's split up into three parts, easier to commit to than, well, I mean, it's unheard of to watch a three-hour documentary that's straight.
It's just unheard of.
So I can't even think of an example is what I'm trying to say.
You're right. I think you're right. All right, we got that out of the way. Cody, why did you watch this? Because you were the person who told me to watch it, and you were the last person I would expect to.
Why?
The last person.
Why?
I just don't see you as like a fan of hip hop or Kanye or anything like that. And so you were
like the
Kanye doc. You were like, so good. And I was like, really? Okay, tell me about it. So why did you initially watch it?
Well, first I would like
because it was there, just because it.
That you don't need to be a fan of a certain type of content or music to be able to appreciate good storytelling about that content.
Wow, come on.
Kind of like the Tindler Swindler. Like, I'm not a fan of Tindler.
Exactly.
But I'll Swindler that
I'll
all day.
I'll Swindler.
So what I did was I watched the trailer.
Yeesh.
And I said,
Was it auto-playing? This feature of Netflix is very polarizing, where you just scroll over things and it just auto-plays.
You can
just
turn
very
it on
abrasive.
Or off.
I know. I am glad that I turned it off.
I turned it off on my, because I watch Netflix on my smart TV, so like the app that pops up.
Yeah.
And ever since I turned off the autoplay, I feel a lot happier about it.
Life.
Yeah, just in general. I just generally walk through my day and I just am just floating above.
No autoplay.
Yeah.
I'm going to get home tonight.
My wife and I haven't even had a fight since I I changed that feature. Mm. Most of our fights were about that. No, but I do enjoy that. I feel like I'm in more control.
You watched the trailer.
And then I watched the trailer of that and I was like, damn, that looks really interesting. And I think Kanye is just an inherently fascinating person. And he's also been, at that point, I feel like maybe he's a little bit less, but when I saw that trailer, he was kind of in the midst of his latest
controversy.
Kind of, yeah, like public mental breakdown scene. So I was like, let's check it out. And then I watched the first episode. And like 20 minutes in, I paused it and I said to my wife, I was like, this is like the freshest, most interesting doc I've seen in a long time. The way that it was edited and the way that they were telling the story, I was like, this is like not your typical Netflix like true crime type doc. You know, like I feel like they're kind of, you know, it's not that it's bad, it works, but it's kind of formulaic. You know, you got like your interview, and then you might have reenactments, you have archive, and it's all just kind of well edited, and that's like your basic.
What interview?
No, I'm talking about like typical docs that have success on Netflix now.
Yep.
There's kind of like a formula to how they're made. And it's fine. But this one was like totally different.
Mm. Yeah.
Like totally different. And it wasn't because they like went into it to make a different thing. It was because the fact that it was made out of 15 years of content.
Yeah. And is it safe to say that us as documentarians...
Let's all move our documentarian glasses.
We know what goes into 15 years of footage. Okay, bye. We know what goes into just. Yeah. What are you doing?
Oh, he needs his documentarian glasses.
He feels left out.
Those are dope. Whose are those?
Some dank ass glasses.
His sunglasses that he popped the lens out of.
He's new girling it right now.
I paused.
For those of you only listening and not watching on YouTube, Cody just put on some really sexy glasses.
I mean, really cool.
For those of you who didn't know, Zooey Deschanel does not have lenses in New Girl, and I can't unsee it now.
That was the thing at the time. Everyone started doing that.
Everyone started doing that?
Yeah, someone who wears glasses. It's very insulting.
It's offensive.
It's offensive.
So, okay, yeah. As documentarians, we know kind of what goes into that amount of footage and just like how this could have been like 17,000 different documentaries, you know? So it's pretty amazing how it came out. Exactly 17,000. It couldn't be like less or more than that. It could have just been that many.
That's good.
I feel like no matter who the subject was, like, this was made infinitely more interesting because it's about someone who's very famous and has a lot of crazy drama in their life. But I feel like if you followed anyone around for the amount of time, and the level of intimacy that he had, it would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because you
but he obviously struck gold.
Very levels of interest.
Just had this feeling of, like, this kid's going to be big someday.
Oh, I think the feeling was just noticing that he made something out of himself. Like, it starts, and it's really not like a rags to riches story. It starts, and he's already successful. Like, he's just not successful. Yeah. He's not successful in the sense that we know him now, where he's like superstardom, like, you know.
Or successful by his own standards. Like, he.
He's making beats for well known artists and.
But he was 18, 19, and he wasn't happy with that. Like, yeah, he was making lots of beats for well known and like being kind of getting his name out there as a producer, but that was not even remotely what he had in store, like in his plans. So self-conscious, she has no idea what she's doing in college. That major that she majored in don't make no money, but she won't drop out of pants or look at her funny. Nah, tell me that ain't insecure. The concept of school seems so secure. Sophomore 3 years, ain't picked a career. She like, fuck it, I just stay down her and do it here, cause that's enough money to buy her a few pairs of new ass, cause a baby daddy don't really care. For a frame of reference, who, you know, for anyone watching or listening, like, were any of you guys like fans of Kanye growing up or anything like that? Like, we're going to come at this from documentary, you know, movie peeps. Movie stuff, peeps,
film stuff. But were you guys actually fans of his music? Have you been? Are you?
Yeah, I definitely listened to a good amount of his music, like in high school, mostly. I didn't listen like straight through his albums as much.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, knew some of the bigger songs and listening before basketball games and stuff.
Listen to them before basketball games.
Yeah, like hype up music.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Why was that weird?
I don't know.
Did you think he meant like before watching basketball on TV?
Yeah, I don't know. I just
yeah, before playing.
Okay. So yeah.
was interested. Like,
I'm about to watch this basketball game.
All right.
With a gold digger.
And in college when like some of his newer albums started coming out, I feel like I started following him a little bit more. And then I was really fascinated with just his latest just kind of conversion experience and everything with his like faith and Christianity and stuff when that was going on with Sunday services. And, you know, I remember I watched like a, that full conversation he had with that guy and like at his ranch in Wyoming. That was about like his experience of like getting really sick and going to the hospital and then like, and his new faith and stuff. And I was just like, not like, you know, fully subscribed or supportive in one way or another, but just fascinated with his journey sort of, and watching it. So I would say I went into it like already pretty fascinated with him and kind of knowing parts of his story, but I didn't know much at all about like his early days. I hadn't even listened straight through all of College Dropout or anything, so I knew a lot less about his early days, just kind of the modern stuff.
Yeah, I'd say I'm in pretty similar boat. I think I remember the first album like actually listening to Kanye was Life of Pablo, and yeah, definitely wasn't around for like College Dropout or anything like that, but I liked that, and then I liked the bipolar one. Like, I hate being bipolar. It's awesome.
Kid See Ghosts with him.
Yeah.
I think I became a fan of his through Kid See Ghosts, honestly.
That album is insane. Like,
Yay as well was also a lot about his bipolar.
Okay, yeah. I didn't really listen to that one, though.
Okay, never mind.
I listened to a lot of the radio hits here and there, but it was at a time when I was like, I don't know. I just didn't get, there wasn't a lot of like top 40 stuff that I was actively, I would assume that if it's top 40, I didn't like it at the time when he was like, when I was like 22 or something and he was really just on top. I associated him with just like, oh, like he's just like pop music. And I automatically like wrote that stuff off because I was just like, like indie hardcore and like whatever. And then the last few years, I realized like there's a lot of people on the top 40 that I really, really love. And I just kind of like allowed myself in the last like 4 years or so to like dive into it.
Yeah.
And then discover like, oh, like some Kanye stuff, like, I actually really like it. And my roommate's really into it.
Now you're a big Carly Rae Jepsen fan.
Yeah. Now I'm like Doja Cat all day. No, not really.
Shawn Mendes is so cute.
I actually, now I feel like I'm back in the, like, I don't really know what's top 40. Like, I'll hear these artist names and I'm like,
yeah.
Just like this one would be. But I appreciate some of Kanye's stuff now, but I feel like I needed to listen to him after seeing this doc, but I really wasn't like a fan. You know, I just like heard like things he has like said, and it's like, oh, he's like got really polarizing views, and people have really strong opinions about it, and I just think it's fun to,
about the doc, about him,
about what he says.
Yeah,
you know, that's like how I've known him more from like just as much from like, oh, there's a few singles I've heard, and then just, oh, Kanye said some crazy thing.
Yeah,
like for the last like 8 years, or like every now and
pretty
then,
much,
it would come up like, oh yeah, Kanye did something, and I'm like, oh okay, like it was very minimal, kind of in my, you know, periphery or whatever.
Right.
I still, I guess, had an opinion like, oh, he seems like he's kind of like pompous, like that was sort of like just it floating around in my head.
Right.
Like, yeah, he's just kind of like a full of himself artist and like whatever. And so when the doc came out, I was like, I just didn't like care about it right away.
Yeah.
And then that's why I was surprised, like hearing like Cody's like, no, it's really good. I'm like,
it was just because I trailered it and it got me interested enough, and then I was glad because it was, I thought, really, really good. And my Kanye experience was very much the same. Like every song that came up throughout the doc, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that song, and I didn't even necessarily associate it with Kanye in my mind, you know, like he had so many hits,
right,
that I recognized, I would say like 90% of the music, but never like really tuned into Kanye as a fan. The biggest Kanye fan I ever have met is John Kopech. He's like, he's been like,
why didn't he come on the podcast?
We should have
so dumb.
But he's big into the Yeezys, and he like collects Yeezys, and he will buy them, like pre-order the latest ones and stuff.
Really?
Like that. Yeah, like he's really into it. So I kind of, because of his interest, when I saw Kanye was on Joe Rogan like, I don't know, 6 months ago or whatever it was, I watched that episode of Rogan, and that really changed my perspective on him a lot, because I was like, oh, like, he is really interesting, and he's super eccentric, but, like, I genuinely do believe that he sees the world in, like, a very unique way and in a very visionary type way that a lot of people don't understand or can relate to, and so they want to write him off as crazier than he is, because obviously he does struggle with mental illness. Like, he's just so interesting. If you, like, he's super talented, you know, arguably a genius in his own way. He's visionary, he's innovative, entrepreneurial, and he's incredibly driven. And then you take all of that and then add, like, bipolar, and you get this, like, this wildly interesting person.
This is what interests me most about this stuff. And Luke and I were talking about it yesterday, about how can you separate the bipolar and, like, the mental illness from the talent and, like, the drive and the work ethic and all of that stuff? And, like, I think about that a lot with certain artists I respect. It's like, oh, but they have this going on. Something that sort of you want to, like, almost cherry pick the best things about them and be like, oh, if they could only, like, get this together, they could, like, really whatever. And I just wonder about that with Kanye. Like, is it part of his, like, drive and the fact that he just, like, almost in an insane, like, borderline, just, like, I don't know, like, unhealthy way, viewed himself as, like, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it. Where a lot of people would hear him talk about himself and just be like, dude, like, pretty full of yourself there, guy. And he's just like, well, yeah, like, I believe, but he, like, would believe in himself so wholeheartedly, almost in a way that's like, maybe that's linked to his mental illness. I don't know. But, like, can you, I don't know, is that part of what made him, you know, change the game, you know?
I mean, it's part of who he is. I wonder, you know, if the mania, the manic part times, give him like endless energy to just pursue whatever he's working at relentlessly. You know, I think it's just, it's a little bit of everything.
Part of me feels like it came with coming to the top, you know, like him getting to the top.
You feel like he developed more of a mental illness as he got more famous?
Yeah, and the pressure of being like so many people looking at you and having opinions about you, and then you say something that is pretty controversial, but it's like, we can say silly things all day, but we're not going to have to deal with repercussions like he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He might say something silly, but then it's, you know, oh, this is what Kanye believes about this. And it's like, he just,
well, that's what drives me crazy about the whole, like, digging for dirt, like, cancel culture thing. 'Cause I'm like, oh, if I ever became successful, like, you know, it would be so easy to, like, dig up stuff about anyone. Like, I know definitely about me. Like, and you're like, crap. Like, is that okay? Like, should we be allowed to do that? Or, like, should we see someone as just like, well, they did this, or that's all they are, you know?
And it's right.
Like, but I don't know. I definitely have been more, I think, open to him not being just like, you know, just like a pompous, like.
I definitely had that opinion for a long time as well. I thought he was, and I think he was pretty full of himself. Still is, I guess.
Yeah. And, well, what you're saying, even Cootie mentioned in some of his narration in the last episode.
It's pronounced Cody, but that's fine.
No.
And he was saying, he talked about, at one point he was like, I knew Kanye, but I'd never met Yeezy. And it's like this almost alternate, like, part of Kanye that kind of scared Cootie. And then he, now we're not going to be able to say, it's the name of the filmmaker.
Kuri.
It's a silent D.
And he, but then at one point he said he has some thought where he shares, like, it was occurring to him that he needed to, like, accept the whole, like, all of Kanye. Like, maybe he couldn't separate these different parts of himself. And that was, like, his story. I can't remember exactly what he said, but something to that kind of sentiment.
Yeah.
And it was interesting.
I remember that line.
Yeah. It was part of his journey in their relationship.
But that kind of, I guess that's where my thought is coming from, where early on, and especially through his first probably couple albums, he, and the whole time, the first two episodes where Cootie is following him with the camera, he has a relentless drive, and he's just, you know, crazy, and people definitely see that. And I think start to sometimes write him off as a little bit crazy.
But yeah, that's the thing. He always had that.
Well, he always had that
blind ambition.
But it, he didn't it seem unstable. Like, that's the thing. Like, after he got pretty big, and I think that maybe, like, the Taylor Swift thing, like, there's a few things that were really people started to think, oh,
I think
he's unstable.
Well, I think him being the same way he's always been, but when it's being in the spotlight and it's not just, like, in a dark corner of a studio, it's like you really start to see it, like, oh, like, he's not filtering himself at all.
You guys are terrible at psychoanalyzing Kanye.
Okay. We're terrible.
I don't know if we're trying to do that.
Why?
But like,
because I'll tell you what happened.
I'll tell ya. All right.
Tell us.
Cody has
Cootie.
All the answers.
His mom died.
Well,
that was the major.
I know, but we're spoiler alert. No, we're trying to figure out. I think if he was.
I believe that he's had his narcissistic and maybe bipolar tendencies from an early age.
Yeah,
you can kind of see that.
Yeah, but which his mother definitely instilled.
She definitely encouraged his confidence.
Not narcissism, but just him really believing in himself, which I think is beautiful.
You on every talent show, remember? every talent show, and Kanye would win all the talent shows. Yeah. But that's why he was so disappointed when you didn't win that year. You got second place doing the Stevie Wonder.
It got to the point where my show, I knew I was going to get first place. I had to help other people with their stuff. That's what it's saying right now. Like, I know my album is going to be right now. I got to help other people with their album. I would like to congratulate you on the good job that you did with me.
Their relationship was super beautiful, and I also think that she was his emotional tether. Like, she was what kept him grounded and kind of was like the constant in his life that he really needed. Mm-hmm. And
when she talks about the giant in the mirror.
He played tracks out of Michael Jordan, shoots free throws. But you know what? I was thinking about something I was going to say to you, Kanye, that I thought was important. How you were down to earth and everything, but you know, you got a lot of confidence. Come off a little arrogant, even though you're humble and everything, but it'd be important to remember that the giant looks in the mirror and sees nothing. Everybody else sees the giant. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then they bring that back later on. Oh, the feels.
So
the feels.
I think what we saw was, you know, okay, Kanye was eccentric and he was narcissistic and all these things, but he
I
was,
hate that word.
He was generally
narcissistic.
Yeah.
He was
narcissistic.
Unless I'm missing something, I think all of the controversies that people associate with Kanye happened after she passed away. I don't think he had any major controversy she passed away, and I think that's not a coincidence. Because I think he lost that tether, and I think he lost that support that kind of kept him stable.
Yeah. And along with, I was also thinking along with that relationship as well, which is probably the most key important one, but it seemed like other friendships and relationships with other people, like once he crossed that threshold of like chasing his dreams and then getting to that point of success, then all of a sudden all the people around you turn from like your
inner
friends,
circle.
Your inner circle who are rooting for you and are pushing you and saying like, you're going to make it, dude, you're going to make it. And like, and then a bunch of people above you who are like, maybe not believing you, but that gives you a chip on your shoulder. Then all of a sudden everything flips and everyone's like, oh, he's made it. Like, and then all these maybe
and
toxic
all these
people
yes
man kind of come around and just like kind of feed that
ego, you're the best.
Kinds of stuff.
I didn't think that he started to go off the deep end until he started to think that, Because when you're climbing and all the odds are stacked against you and you just keep hitting walls, but then you're breaking through them, it's like that was driving him. That was giving him energy, and that was him being like, I'm going to like show the world. And then he makes it, and he's just like coasting above the clouds. And then he's still – the only blocks are coming from his own mind at that point. He's like, I'm just going to push through. You know, I'm going to make a sneaker brand. And it's like, because all these people are like, you know, saying this stuff again. And you're just like, I don't think anyone's really like, you know, fighting against you at this point, buddy. Like, you're on top. But yeah, it's still, like, it's, like, the mentality of, like, oh, man, I have all these people, you know, like, if you're, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe, yeah, there was plenty of, like, you know, barricades and like, just maybe more cultural, societal things that he was trying to speak against and all of that. But at that point, it's, like, dude, you are on top. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, I got to show the world. Still, he had that mentality. You're, like, I mean, you.
I think.
Yeah. Like, can you just. Can you just accept that and, like, float for a while? Like, probably not. You have to still be like,
no, because you're asking him to change who he is. Like, I think, you know, different.
I don't think he knew what to do with that success. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, when he reaches the top.
Different people, but similar trends. When you look at, like, the greatest of all time in almost anything, they kind of are a little bit crazy like that.
I don't know if it's possible not to be.
Exactly. Because you look at, like, just sports. Like, look at Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
He.
There's a lot of similarities to The Last Dance.
Yeah. He would literally.
I was going to say that.
Michael Jordan would I don't know create controversy that wasn't there in order to motivate himself. So he would create beef with other players and stuff that didn't actually exist.
Well, that is something people do. If we are so comfortable and, like, have everything, all our needs met, and, like, we were living in utopia, we will create chaos because we're bored.
Yeah, we, like, need conflict. So, and, like, Tom Brady, similarly, he has that, like, maniacal drive that, like, you know,
really?
These are. Oh, yeah, he's crazy.
I don't know anything about
Michael
Jordan.
Yeah, he's...
I know that he...
They said Tom Brady.
Well, both of them.
Oh, wait.
Tom Brady and Michael Jordan, in their own ways, have that...
My brain's just like, sports people?
They both are the
basketball?
Most...
Watching it? What are you listening to?
You score of the donkey goal?
You dunked a goal in the soccer field?
Did he score a dunk? Did he spike the goal? Like, literally care.
We should play a game.
Zero percent.
We should have a segment where we just say something very, like, a simple fact or statistic about sports, and then immediately after, see if Mike can repeat it back.
I zone out.
And this is a part of the show where we tell sports facts to Mike.
Like, if we were just like, Tom Brady's career winning percentage is .657. What's Tom Brady's career winning percentage? She'd be like, darn.
Well, I don't even know what you're talking
some
about.
Some number.
How is something 657%? I don't. Doesn't make sense.
Okay. Anyways, all I was trying to draw was.
I just don't want to be a team player, guys.
Why do I have to be the team player?
Why do I have to be the team player?
Drawing a line of comparison between three different characters who are at the very, very pinnacle of what they of achievement.
Yeah.
Don't have anything to prove to anyone, and yet they still are, like, finding ways to outdo themselves and continue that drive. Because, like, you have to be a little crazy, I think, to even get there in the first place.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was thinking a lot about a lot of similarities to Bob Dylan, actually, and a lot of his journey as well.
What position did he play?
Yeah, but also just like a little bit crazy. Yeah, sorry. Mike's not a big Bob Dylan fan, but he's probably the greatest songwriter of all time.
The greatest songwriter of all time.
And he did that. But he was like, he was the greatest of his generation. And like, yeah, dude. Fight me.
The only one who could express opinions on the Votary Podcast is Michael Palumbo.
No, I'm just
other people have thoughts on music. What? Some of the similarities, like, well, Dylan started out his career a little bit, like, more focused on, like, activism and stuff, and like, really felt like he had to speak to what was going on in the world, which is a little bit different than how Kanye started out, but everyone,
a little bit though,
yeah, a little bit. And he, but he became so overwhelmed with everyone's expectations and, like, just pressure to, like, be this, like, be the voice of our generation, be, like, you know, speak for us. And as soon as he switched over and, like, you know, he started playing, like, rock music, and people were mad that he wasn't doing acoustic, and everyone, you know, wanted him to write only, like, political songs and stuff.
Was that, like, more in the 70s? His 70s stuff, or like his 80s stuff was more like the like gospel stuff, right?
Yeah, but well, no, the shift started to happen. It was still like late 60s, I think.
Oh,
like,
really?
Like Blonde,
like he was
Blonde.
He was moving away from folk at that point.
Yeah, kind of like, okay. Blonde on Blonde, and maybe one before that. That's, yeah, he started doing a little bit more rock, and
just
he,
to be clear,
just all, yeah.
I don't hate Bob Dylan.
Okay.
I really don't like Johnny Cash, and I get a lot of crap for that. I just don't like it, but I do appreciate Bob Dylan. I just don't listen to him.
Yeah.
And it's just because the sound of his voice is annoying. But the rest of his... Shame. But his song... Yeah, his songwriting, as in his lyrics and stories.
Yeah.
And I don't know really about, like, chord progression and structure. I feel like it's sort of, like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But, like, his writing...
Yeah.
Is amazing.
I mean, he won the Nobel.
Yeah, and he deserves it. Yeah. I would sit and read his lyrics and
yeah.
just enjoy that.
Yeah. But Kanye also had a little similarities where people were like, wanted him to be more political than he was, or thought he had a lot of potential to like speak to politics and race and stuff.
He tried.
And then they're unhappy with what he said.
Is trying.
George and, Bush does not care about black people.
Yeah. that's the best we got. But he...
I don't know.
Other things. But then also had that that conversion experience, like the gospel kind of thing as well. But yeah, and also a similar story in terms of like feeling like they were both like amalgamation of like different people almost at different times and like, or opposing sides of themselves.
Oh,
do you feel like Bob Dylan went, cause I don't know a lot about him, but, did you feel like he kind of started to go off the deep end as he got more and more famous?
Not quite to the extent that people think that Kanye did, but, definitely just like, I think grew really tired of like, just the constant media pressure, and he's like, and everything I say is like meaningless. So he would just say whatever he wanted, like in interviews and stuff. And
yeah, I get that sense with Kanye that he doesn't really mean fully what he's saying a lot of the time, but he just likes to say things that make people go like, what? Or like, what? Yeah. And I relate to that impulse. Like if I was being bombarded, I would probably say some really stupid things just to.
I don't
like
think that
mess with
his
people.
Like Kanye is ever looking for reactions, or at least rarely. Like that scene where I think it's in the third episode, where he's, I think that is, are they in the Dominican
Island? I think
he's just
being flippant about it, is what I'm saying. He's just like.
Well, I think he wants to be understood, but he is on such a different wavelength than everyone else that when he's talking, people don't get what he's saying, and it sounds kind of nonsense sometimes. So I don't know.
A lot
like
of times it is kind of nonsense. But
yeah, sometimes it is nonsense.
What when you were talking when you was in the Dominican?
Yeah. See,
so it's where like the doc starts and ends,
yeah.
basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're having that conversation with, he's like two investor dudes,
oh,
and they're like sitting,
yeah.
and then he's like off his pills, and Cootie's filming it. And then yeah. he's like, I have to stop. Like he,
yeah.
his voiceover, he's like,
I wish he didn't stop filming.
Well, I really resonate with that because I hate capturing, like I hate continuing to film something where I feel like my presence is better.
It's getting exploitive or something.
Yeah, yeah. Or like I'm not being relationally there.
Yeah.
That
was like
yeah.
one of the craziest scenes. It was almost like scary to watch.
Right. Because he just kept talking and talking and they weren't.
Well, you could just see on their face that they are like babysitting.
Yeah.
You know, you see on their face that they're not taking him seriously at all.
Yeah.
And he just wants to be taken seriously so bad. And but
yeah.
he has so many things that he's trying to say, but he's really just kind of talking in circles.
I mean, think about like your life, what you'd be like if you were always just in a room and people always treated you like that. Like you'd say things and they are kind of just like, oh, yeah. And like kind of being... Yes, man.
Yeah, you
and
Cootie would move
really
around
listen.
The room, and you could see that on their faces. They're like, they're not really present. They're like, oh, but it's Kanye.
Yeah,
they're there because it's Kanye.
You can tell it in the back of their mind. They're like, this guy's crazy.
Yeah,
but they're like, yeah,
they're
yeah,
like totally, bro. Yeah, and
yeah.
like, and you
and like,
think that
I
want to
get your money. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, and you think he can't sense that, and
yeah.
he does sense it.
I mean, you totally see, yeah. like he has he has several songs, but like on, I think, Life of Pablo, like Real Friends, he talks about, and a lot of people who, Kendrick raps about this a lot, where like they get to the top and then they experience like that all of a sudden they just don't have any real friends around them because everyone wants a piece of the pie.
Which is why I think one of the coolest story, I mean, it is the main storyline almost. Actually, maybe that's arguable, but one of the storylines in the doc is the relationship with Cootie, Kanye's.
I think it is. I think it is the documentary.
Yeah, and then he, like, that's why I said that it feels like a two-part series to me.
Interesting.
Is that the first two episodes are when Cootie was with him. At the beginning, he's documenting the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then he stops and Kanye kind of cuts him out of his life.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much. And then he comes back around Kids See Ghost.
Yeah.
And in between that, it's like the most, that's the Kanye most people are familiar with. So it kind of,
the craziest Kanye too.
The craziest Kanye in the things that most people know, he's the most famous. And it's like convenient that it's like, oh, those are all the things we almost don't need to.
And that's when he's at the top. And that's when he's lost all his friends. And he's like, I don't really remember that song, but it's interesting that he would sing about that. Mm-hmm. But then it's kind of self-induced. Like, Cootie was always there.
Yeah.
And maybe there was other people. I mean, yeah.
One of the saddest parts watching it was that scene where he tells him to stop filming in the recording studio who was it, Common invited him to come to
Kanye
the recording.
Did something he never did before. He told me to stop filming.
So I did.
I didn't know who this Kanye was anymore. He has a great voice.
I love him. The cadence of his narration is like, is great.
Yeah. He just nailed it. but that was like, out of everything else like that happened and like how he treated people and stuff, you're like, okay, yeah. But then when he did that, you're like, oh, man.
The other heartbreaking Cootie kind of heartbreak scene was after the Grammys and Kanye was with him drunk and he kept calling him by the other guy's name.
Oh, that was like,
that was so painful.
Cringe
fest. And he, like, and, no, didn't edit that scene at all. Just like left like that whole clip.
What's the other guy's name?
I can't remember, but it felt like, the first
that
couple
must have been
Chike,
painful.
Chike. The first couple of times he called him that, it was genuine. He was drunk and he was confusing the two guys with cameras that follow him around.
Yeah.
And from Cootie's perspective, it's like, dude, I'm like your buddy. Like,
yeah.
And then don't just call me Chike because he also has a camera. Like,
yeah.
Picture
your best friend right now. Imagine them not saying your name.
And then I think that Kanye kind of realized, oh, I just called him Cheeky like 3 times. So then he started to kind of mess with him with it a little bit. So,
yeah.
But
to make it seem,
to seem like it was a joke the whole time.
But then it was just.
But it definitely wasn't. Yeah.
No.
So that was rough. That was definitely rough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But back to the scene where they're in the Dominican or whatever, and he's talking to those investors. To me, it's like, I feel like I've been in situations like that where.
Really?
You know, I've probably all have to some extent. Like if you're sober and someone's super drunk. And they're trying to, like, talk to you, like, seriously. And you're like, this person is an absolute fool. And you're just kind of like, yeah, uh-huh. You know, like, I feel like we've all been there.
Yeah.
I've also had times where I've been, like, talking to someone. I'm like, oh, this person. It's weird when someone's mentally ill because they're talking. And their body language, the way they're talking, everything. It's like as if everything they're saying makes perfect sense. And so a part of you is like, am I missing something here? What's like not connecting here?
Yeah.
And then you just realize like, no, they're just like in another world. Like,
I don't think he was like having a full mental breakdown as much as he just wasn't latching onto one thing at a time. I have friends.
It's like doing too many things at once and his brain doesn't connect the dots. It's like, mm-hmm. you got all these dots and they're pretty interesting, Doc.
If I'm on an off day, I mean, I have ADD and I don't take anything for it. So I just like have to, you know, do what I have to do. I have days like that. I've noticed myself where I'm just like, bleh, 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 and then it's just like, it's like a tree and you start with one, you know, idea and then you just branch off. And I have friends who are more extreme on that end. You're like, what are you what are you talking about right now? Mm-hmm. You're talking about this one thing. And I sort of like related it back to that, but I do think,
do you feel like in his head it's making all sense and it's making sense and connecting?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's just like
It's pain. It's probably painful for him. Like how? I don't know. You probably.
I think one thing.
Everyone experiences it to a degree where you have an idea in your head and you want to translate it, like verbally, but it's just too much. Like, and it's hard to find the words.
One thing is related to another, and you get a stack of things all at once, and then you, but your mouth can only say a linear sentence at a time. So you pull things out like there's just like a string of what in your head was all connected.
Yeah.
But they just come out as like five separate thoughts, and nobody has a chance to respond or even or like appropriately to it, because it's just like, it's just like I just got bombarded with like.
I feel like
several.
Elon talks about that.
I was just gonna bring him
really
up. So
with the like mind link thing or whatever.
Neuralink.
Yeah, he's like our voices, our mouth is like a bandwidth issue. Like, or no,
it's both. He says our current major bottleneck in like human communication
bottleneck,
is our thumbs.
Yeah.
Like we communicate through the internet and through devices, but we're limited by the speed of our thumbs and like our fingers for typing. But then he believes that the future of human communication is going to be completely nonverbal and intuitive. So like we would be able to like look at each other and hear each other's thoughts on a way higher like frequency. And so I would understand like your intention and all this crap like non-verbally.
Can you imagine what that would sound like for Kanye's brain?
Well, that's what I'm like. I'm like, no, I'm sure,
because
like
then it wouldn't be crazy anymore. It'd actually be like he would be ascended.
It would either be like so much better or so much worse.
Yeah.
Because think about so many people are verbal processors. The idea is formulated through speaking it out.
Yeah. Wow. Like, I don't think you can separate thought from language like that.
Well, Elon thinks he can. He just bought Twitter, so
you know what keeps me sane.
That seems like a conflict of interest.
I've probably told you guys this, but what keeps me sane is in audio journals. Like I walk and I talk out loud, and the only reason I record it is just an act of like you're writing something.
Yeah,
like you could be just script. You could write on one single line and just write over the same words because it doesn't really matter. You might not want to read it later, but maybe you do. I never listen to that, but I just rant to myself on my phone. If I have like a lot of just like thoughts, or if I have like some sort of feeling I don't know what to do with, and I'm so I'm an external verbal processor in that way. And it really keeps me sane. Like it really does help.
Yeah. Like all of majority of therapy, like psychological therapy is just talking to someone and them asking.
Yeah. It's
like,
just, it's just things I don't want to burden anyone with, including a therapist.
And also think about how
I get that. But we the same thing is it, you know, that you can do it with yourself and journaling and stuff, but it's also applies to our friendships and relationships and then in a professional capacity. And if you don't have that space in the right way in your life with the right people who are actually going to listen, then like our brains just start to like not work as they should.
That's right.
I also think about the fact that so much emotion needs to get processed first before you can actually get to the, like the actual core of what you're trying to communicate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everything is driven by emotion.
So whenever I have like an argument with my wife, usually we start with like emotion sometimes. And we're like, you know, like I'm
not since you switched to Netflix, you turned the thing off.
back before I discovered how to turn that autoplay off.
Yeah.
We would have arguments and it would always start with like, you know, emotion, like, oh, I'm frustrated, I'm mad, I'm sad, whatever. And then you're not actually getting to the point of what's going on and like what the solution is until you kind of get all that out. And then you're like, okay, here's where we're at. This is the heart of the issue and this is what we need to do. And then
you're definitely the one sorting through that part.
But I mean,
you're like the analytical, logical person with no emotion,
with no heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was just imagining, if the Neuralink thing, imagine, like, would you not just be subjected to, like, all their emotional processing? It would be really
weird. I think it sounds more like it would be overwhelming. It sounds like it would be, like, the beginning of when you get mutant powers or something in a movie, and they're just like, oh, I can't handle it. Like, Jean Grey is, like, trying to, like, read someone's mind, she's like,
Or Professor X.
Like, Professor X. He's like, oh, it's too overwhelming. I'm going to, like, it sounds like something like that would happen.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that, I would try this type of thing out if it was literally, like, you know, a 1980s sci-fi headset or some shit. Like, I like, putting it in my brain, get out of here. You're not putting anything inside my brain. Like, get out
of
here.
There would have, to be filters of some kind, you know?
Filters of some kind.
I wouldn't want to, I need a filter for what Mike says, let alone what's in his brain.
Yeah, no, like, trust me.
The stuff that he's like, no, this is good. This should go out in the world.
That needs a filter.
Yeah, well.
I need a filter on the filter.
Sometimes I don't have a filter. That's the problem. But no, I. Why are we talking about Neuralink?
Oh, I don't know.
You mentioned Elon Musk, and we're talking a lot about mental health things.
Oh, yeah. Do you guys think that it is possible to separate someone's issues, someone's mental health, emotional state, addiction, from their ambition and success and creativity? Do you think that, like, one influences the other, or do you think that it's always possible to be perfectly healthy and still be successful in those ways?
Not right away. There has to be a process of, like, figuring out.
What do you mean, not right away? Like,
I think that every creative is going to go through a journey and a process of, like, learning how to balance their ambition with their, like, with health, relational health, spiritual, emotional, physical health in their life. And it probably will be really bad at first. And then, you know, if you try and you have the right people around you, like, I think you could see success in terms of balancing those. But I think, yeah, with the right community and the right support and the right people.
I mean, that's another, just, that's what the Kanye Duck is about.
I think you
need some support.
I think art is it's an outflow. It's a product of where the artist is at when they're producing the art, whatever it is. So, like, I think that the question, can you separate them? I don't think you can, because I think no matter where the artist is at, that's going to influence what they're putting out. So, like, I think, you know, take a musician who's, like, drug addicted and depressed and having, like, this really angsty lifestyle. Their art is going to reflect that, and I think a lot, and then they might get healthier, and then their art may not have the same, like, edge.
That's the fear, I think, for a lot of people, and I relate to that because I've always created out of a place of frustration or desperation. Like, when that's when I'm my most creative is when I'm the most miserable.
Yeah, it's because you need to get that out more than when you're just happy. Like, you want,
like, I will create when I'm in a good place, but it just will be. It'll be different. And I think I'm trying to get over that, whatever that worry is, because I don't think that it's true. I think people can get healthy and be creative and be successful in that and be ambitious and energized. But there is something where it's like when you're holding on to whatever your creative drive or ambition is because it's almost like your lifeline, there is a depth there that's not there any other time, because it's almost like without this, like, I need this right now. You know, it's a different kind of thing. And it's like, it's so easy to compartmentalize when you see artists or writers or filmmakers or whatever, who they make something so amazing and you're like, but you know, they're not in a good place.
There's a weird correlation between negative feelings and productivity. Like, whether it be sports or writing or whatever, a lot of people get themselves upset, get themselves angry, or tap into those negative emotions in order to put out whatever they're trying to, like, to achieve.
Yeah.
Like, Jordan Peterson just interviewed, I forget the guy's name, another author, but they were both relating to the fact that they can only write when they're angry.
What?
They were saying, like, I have to get angry about something to motivate myself to sit down to get the art, to get the writing done.
Like, angry at yourself for not doing it,
whatever it is. And I think also, like, that, you know, they're both of these guys are kind of deep thinking authors, so they write about, like, big, weighty, meaningful topics. So it's like, it's like, I need to really care about this if I'm going to be able to write about it in a effective way. And so I need to get angry about the things in the world that I'm mad about to motivate me to, you know. And I think it's very similar in a lot of ways. But I think a healthy person can can be incredibly creative. I just think that art is always a reflection of where you are in your life.
I think there is some sort of tie between suffering and art in some ways. Like, I feel like even if it's not like a super heavy like content that you're dealing with, or it's coming out of like a season of like suffering in your life, there's an extent to which you have to like suffer through like the process of like birthing like a creative vision, you know, and it can be like painful because like you'll be disappointed with like, oh, this didn't turn out how I wanted, and you have to fight through that. So there's always a certain amount of like suffering. But as soon as you get this mentality that, oh, I need to like conjure up some sort of misery or like suffering so that I can create more, I think that maybe opens up it's problematic, and it could open up a can of worms, and then could end up spoiling that process.
Well, at that point, it's contrived too.
Yeah, it's contrived, and it's because the whole point of like creativity, like the reason why creativity can and suffering can be related almost in a positive way is because it's how we can receive whatever suffering we're going through and then output it into something positive. But that only work, you know, you don't want to willingly conjure up the suffering just to output something. Like, it has to come out of this like necessity and this need.
Well, assuming that, you know, whatever you're creating is
inherently
positive. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but
yeah.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. No, definitely.
I think there's a strong correlation between like just the amount of creativity you can put out and the circumstances that you're in. Like,
yeah, no, that's kind of why I used to think the opposite of this. Like, I used to think that I needed to be, not that I kept myself in some sort of dark place, but I thought I would almost lose my drive if I got fully just like content with life. And I also didn't really relate to whatever that would be anyway. So I was like, well, this is all I know, and this is where I make the things that mean the most to me. So why would I even try to like see the world a different way?
Yeah.
Like, cause and now I'm like, well, actually I could see, and actually reading David Lynch's book, it's like a short book on meditation, but he talks about this where he's like, people ask me all the time, like, oh, like you're over here making all these weird, twisted, dark movies and then talking about like meditation and like beauty and positivity and like getting healthy. They're like, what's up with that? And he's like, people assume that, you know, I want to like, you know, that I have all this like darkness inside me, and I only can create this stuff because I'm depressed or I'm like twisted up inside. And he's like, that's not true. Like, a lot of these things come from a certain place, and it's come from some sort of creative space. He's like, when I was the most depressed is when I couldn't get things done. I'd have ideas, but I just couldn't work on them. And he's like, now I've cleared a lot of that clutter out, and I have all this drive and follow through and clarity, and I can still create things that are from this sort of processing dark, you know, things that's separate from myself.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting, because I'm like, I consider him someone who's really prolific and interesting and, you know, highly creative and bizarre, and like someone who does kind of create things that feel like they're from like the dark kind of recesses of your mind. You'd assume that like, man, this guy's messed up. Like, and then he's like, you know, as far as I know, pretty happy guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That stuff personally fascinates me, because I'm like, think about Kanye, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if he just got like totally, totally like happy and fulfilled, and like, you know, stop seeing the world as this, everyone's against him. Like, if he would create like his best work, or if he would create, you know, I think maybe his version of that was like the gospel album. And like, a lot of people, I think, hate it. And like, I thought it was fine. I don't listen to like that type of music. So it didn't connect with me on like a lot of levels, but I thought, I was like, oh, for this type of music, like, cool. At least he's, for me, I was thinking more of like, as a, an artist, like, at least he's doing something different. Mm-hmm. At least he's like pushing the boundaries of like what people, how people know him. Like, it's not even a hip hop album. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not. And I think that was cool, but, mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm at this point, maybe I'm rambling like one of those conversation trees that I was saying, but,
conversation trees.
Yeah. When you start on one topic and then
that's cool.
Oh, that's cool, man.
That's cool. That's cool.
I think that, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but like this, when the artist, like when your creativity and your art becomes like the central thing in your identity and like is what gives you worth.
Yeah.
I think is what can kill it. And like,
that can kill the art
to an extent. But it can be very bad for you, your person, your, like spiritually and on other levels. I think if your sense of worth is like dependent on the work that you're putting out, then it becomes like this, the pressure of it is like, can I think, kill the joy of like what creativity.
So
can
many
be all
artists
about.
Just heard that and went, uh-oh.
I think it has to come out of like not of a place of like desperation almost. In terms of like if I can't make something really good, then I'm not like worthy as a person.
Yeah,
won't like me and all kinds of stuff.
Then, you're saying your value and self worth and confidence and purpose has to come from a separate, deeper place.
Yeah.
Than just your ability to have the output of your creative.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about that.
That's a really good way to put it. But at this, it's weird because that I almost hold in tension with like I feel like an artist has to have like this deep need, like to create.
Like the chip on your shoulder, like you mentioned earlier. Like
But not a need out of like, if I do this, if I don't do this, I won't be worthy as a person. But like, if I don't do this, I just like I won't be being myself, kind of. And I think that really great artists will feel that need in good times and bad times.
Yeah, I think there's something to letting go of that. I think there are obviously great artists who have a huge chip on their shoulder and a huge ego, and that is the place they create from. Mm-hmm. But I think there's like, I do think there is a like a deeper place of letting that go and letting like, I don't know, like there's like a, just like the creative force, whatever that is like, available to all of us, just letting that kind of go and just be the conduit for it. And I don't think you can do that when you're just like obsessed with like, oh, I want to do my special thing that's mine.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing that's crazy is I actually kind of think that everyone needs, every artist like, or anyone really needs to like have that crazy amount of confidence in themselves to be able to create that Kanye has, but I think it's better when it's like this silent thing that you keep to yourself that drives you, you know, where you're like, I think I have the potential to be like the greatest ever, you know.
You do?
I don't know. No,
you keep like, that to yourself.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I do. I just,
but you just
I don't
this.
Tell people. No, I'm saying
I don't usually tell people this.
I don't tell people this.
But I think I could be the greatest.
I kind of understand, Kanye. No, but I'm saying there has to be a part of you that is a little bit crazy that like, at least in some part of your brain thinks like, if I reach my full potential, I could be like one of the greatest ever at my thing. But as soon as you start telling people that, I don't know, I just feel like it's better when it's like this quiet confidence you have and you're like, I don't need it.
You have to believe in yourself, as cheesy as that sounds, like you have to believe that you can make that happen. Mm-hmm. But if, I mean, I do think there is something to like speaking it out and having that, like, you know, like be an added layer of drive. But then I do think that people don't, people don't tend to respond super well when someone, because there's plenty of people who are out there who are all talk, and they don't, and we don't know how to decipher, and sift through.
Yeah, you got
to. Unless
prove
you're
it.
Someone like Cootie in this documentary who was able to be like, I don't think he's all talk. Like, I think he's having follow through in that, and that's the thing is like Kanye's a lot of talk, but he clearly was
he's out there
actually
it done.
Getting things done, and he did have the drive. And there were so many opportunities where what was inspiring to me as an artist, even though I'm not like a huge Kanye fan, I've become somewhat of a Kanye fan, but like what was inspiring is the fact that like he would continually not be satisfied with what wasn't the purest form of his creative ambition and just like what he felt like was inside him. I thought that was really cool because a lot of people would have settled and been like, this is good enough.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do that. And I also think it was cool that he kept hitting walls and he was just, you know, the simple fact of just not giving up from that adversity is inspiring because he really did hit the point that I think he got bigger than he ever could have even dreamed.
Yeah.
I think he dreamt really big.
Well, he's a billionaire.
But I think he has gotten bigger than he could have even imagined. Like,
you know how the game be. I can't let him change me. Because on Judgment Day, you going to blame me. Look, God, it's the same me. Basically, no, now we get racially profiled. Cuffed up and hosed down. Pimped up and hoed down. Plus, I got a whole city to hold down. From the bottom, so the top's the only place to go now.
Well, there was that moment, one of the probably the best parts in the documentary, I thought, was when he finally gets a chance that he plays some of his music for Pharrell, and then he like lays out some bars and stuff for him, and Pharrell is like just,
he like leaves the studio for a second because he's just like, holy
crap. He's going crazy. And then, but he tells him, like, he gives like this heart to heart to him. He's like, you have something.
You one of my favorite artists, man.
Oh, shit. Good looking.
Nah, for real. That's real. That's real. And I only heard like 2 records. Yeah. You gonna make it. And when you make it, keep the same perspective. Mm. Still keep the same hunger. You know what I mean? That hunger is to always be, man, I feel something. I gotta go put it down, man. And then you put it down. Mm. As long as you keep that, you're going to always be ill for the rest of your life.
I was like, oh, dang, that was strong.
It's cool. Well, it's cool to have, like, he had mentors.
Yeah.
He had friends and then became enemies, but he had some mentors, too, and I think that's important. It's cool.
Yeah.
They seem to change throughout, you know, the years, and I think eventually, I think he almost wanted to be the mentor at that point, and then I think he probably just still needed a community of friends, you know?
Yeah.
It seemed like he didn't get it when he needed it the most, and then he kind of created it with Kids See Ghosts and with the church. He literally made a church, and the Sunday services is just like a Kanye led music like
ministry
experience. Yeah. That's a church.
Cody kind of mentioned like at the beginning just the form of the documentary, and I didn't even realize or think about it till now that there's zero interviews, like real. Like,
no, not a single sit down interview.
There's like the interviews that he has, like in the context of like the what was the name of that TV station that he had?
Channel Zero.
Yeah, and like those, but that's kind of within the world of the story.
Right, that wasn't for this documentary.
Yeah,
it's kind of like,
but
in the moment,
it's just straight footage and narration, and it was so interesting. I loved. The times where he chose to like speed things up and like show you glimpses. Cause like we said, it was all the like biggest controversial stuff that you would have thought that he would have like delved into, like, oh, the thing with Taylor Swift, like what was his reaction after that and all this stuff.
Yeah. He just sort
he
of
just
skimps
like skipped over.
He's
like, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
No one knows about like the in between moments of like doubt or like awkward moments or like this one
losing,
encouraging
losing
thing,
friends
losing
and
friends,
confronting them.
So many. Yeah. There's the best parts. Most interesting parts were just like the long extended scenes that he just let be raw, like Kanye bringing his demo into the record label and just walking down the hall going into every office unannounced
and just playing and a CD for them at this like 6 CD changer as they're like trying to book
other
things.
They're like doing calls and stuff.
Well, because you know, watching it, you're like, these people think he's like some nut, and then he becomes Kanye West. Like, he becomes, all these people told that story around a dinner table for years. Like, you know, Kanye West came into my office and just, you know, like, that became like their claim to fame that moment. You know, everyone who interacted with him at that point, which is so funny.
Yeah. Those are the most compelling parts to me.
My favorite, one of my favorite scenes is totally unrelated to Kanye, but Cootie's daughter interview.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
When she talks about wanting to be an artist and how she loves Kanye and like Kanye's an artist and you know, I don't know why that scene like hit me.
Yeah.
Just right in the chest. It was so good.
Yeah.
She was so cute and like insightful and like had like, I love when like children have like wisdom like that. It was just cool.
And yeah, he's just such a good storyteller. Like,
Cootie?
Yeah,
his story is very fascinating. Like, his choice to leave a budding career in entertainment and just say, F it, I'm going to go to New York and start following this guy. Like, that's such a bold move.
Yeah.
And then it was cool to see him.
And then to, like, get out of the spotlight later in life when he had a kid and, like.
Yeah, like, he seemed like a really, Cootie seemed like a really grounded, healthy guy. And, like, really genuinely cared about Kanye and was not there to ride his coattails at all.
Yeah.
You know, probably there was some part of him who was obviously enjoying the success as it was happening, but
And he saw, like, right at the beginning, he saw that there was like a big story there and an opportunity, and so he took that, but it wasn't like exactly.
It was interesting to see how he himself became successful in the industry in his own right as a music video producer along the way.
Yeah.
And like became a sought after director and stuff.
Which makes sense.
Everyone needs a Cootie in their life.
I think that my favorite moment with Cootie, I mean, I love the stuff with his daughter too, but towards the end of the third episode where they're driving in the car and he's talking to his dad. And
Kanye's talking to his dad?
Yeah.
When he's FaceTiming his dad?
Yeah.
He's talking about the bowls. Before they go into that place with a bowl artist?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I can't remember. Maybe I'm mixing stuff up, but I thought it was funny how Kanye... actually, this is his dad said this, I think. Where he's like, next time, just like write your speech out.
No, Kanye says that himself, I think. He's like,
said it.
He's like, Kanye, next time just write your speech.
And then Kanye was so receptive, and he's like,
all right, Cootie, next time we're going to write it, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was a separate thing. I forgot that was his dad. But it was just so cool, like, seeing Cootie be there for him in those moments. And, like, he actually needed someone, like, to support him like that and tell him, like, no, and give him real feedback, you know, and it seemed like that's what he was doing. He's like,
throughout, I felt like Kanye still needs maybe like just like a buddy and like support. It really felt like maybe I think you're probably right, Cody, about like the fact that he lost his mom and then he was sort of like stunted. Like he kind of has this innocence about him, like, you know, like way he'll talk and like
the childlike.
He is childlike, like where, and I don't think it makes him like immature or like stupid or something. It's just there's a sense of like, he's so easily influenced by like things people will say like that, and the fact that he'll just like say things
actually
and then think
it's
about
a
it
good
later.
Point
like, he is
when,
kind of
whenever
like,
there
he
was,
needs to be babysat
whenever there was a scene of like another rap artist or someone who would start giving him advice or talking to him, he would be like
latching
super receptive to whatever they were saying. And so I think he's actually a pretty, like, strangely, that's a sign of humility.
Right. I think that was one of the most shocking things or interesting things to me about watching the documentary was having that perception before watching it, like, oh, he's just arrogant. He doesn't, you know, he does his own thing, which is true. He's very confident.
Well, yeah, he's literally said, like, I am a god. And he says like, these things where you're just like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I just told you who I thought I was. Oh, God!
But that's all. That's it's all just in weird. Front of cameras and stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is like I feel like he likes to just in those moments he likes to just stir things up.
I think there's a part, a quote where he's like, I'm putting on a character now.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah,
if he says
he's because Cootie wanted to release the documentary or work on the documentary.
Right,
and
right.
As soon as he started getting big, and he was like, no, he didn't want to release any of that because like he's not ready for the world to see the real him.
Yeah,
he's playing a character.
Yeah.
But the reason I said everyone needs a cootie in their life is like he was just this figure of like being constant and like there along the way. Even from a distance, he would talk about how he's thinking about Kanye. And one of the scenes I really loved was, you know, after he'd had his experience of having his daughter, and then there's that few shots where he's like, and then I heard that Kanye had like his own child, and I was hopeful for how that would affect him, and I think he needed that, and like he, from a distance,
he was always rooting for him.
Yeah, he was rooting for him, and rooting for him in a way of not like all the other yes men or whatever of like, yeah, I just want you to be successful and like. Whatever you say. But like he had this deeper understanding of what he thought like was really good for him. Even he could tell like when he was straying from the path, he was like, no, you need to get back to this path. You know, we need people like that who will nudge us back when we're going astray. And it was cool to see that their kind of reunion and a little bit of reconciliation either. I've actually heard from people that they, Kanye hasn't watched it yet.
Really?
Hasn't seen the documentary, and they're kind of on bad terms now, which is a little bit sad.
I don't think that's true.
Who's on bad terms?
Cootie and Kanye.
I mean, they might be on bad terms now because Kanye's just been all over the place, but I remember before the doc came out, and this had me pretty intrigued, is that Kanye posted, he's like, don't put the doc out unless I've seen the final thing. Like, I need to have final, like...
Yeah.
Approval on it. And I was like, okay, like maybe Netflix is trying to like paint him in a certain picture.
Yeah.
You know? And I was really curious, like, what's going to happen. And then it just came out without any more tweets or posts from him about it.
Well, he said that about his album too, where he was like, someone leaked it and it wasn't his final version, but then we never saw another version of the album come out. So it's just sort of like, well, is this. The album seemed unfinished to me as a listener.
Yeah.
It was like a million songs and a lot of them didn't even have beats. And you're like, is this done?
Yeah.
But then no new version came out.
One of the top, I started writing R. Kanye and like the top thing was like R. Kanye and Cootie still friends.
Oh, wow.
That was the top Google search.
What does it say?
That's because it's listening to you right now.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it happens.
No, Google would not do that.
Google doesn't like me.
Google doesn't do that.
Let's, I give it a
real quick.
I give it a.
Do you guys like the style of it? How they presented it? How they edited it?
Yeah, it's
yes, yes.
It's. I think it's like, it's the best thing. It's the best thing he could have come up with, for, so many different, like types of footage and like formats, and. The fact that the audio was so good from like way back in the day, and the fact that it
from on camera mic, whatever it was,
right? Like the pacing was so good, where he had a nice mix of montage and music, and the mood and setting the mood, and then like you mentioned, like the fact that they had like long drawn out takes of just like handheld, like shaky walking through, like where they're not cutting and you're just engaged in it, and then a nice little balance of other things like we know about and sort of piecing together. Like his timeline, it just had it was just like masterfully edited. Like
I feel like I haven't talked about any of the aspects of I haven't had it. Oh god, I'm gonna have to start again.
If only had the Neuralink right now, we would just know.
We wouldn't even need a podcast.
No, I've had so many interesting conversations about the Kanye doc, and I feel like we didn't get into any of the interesting stuff that I've those conversations. So I don't think we'll do another podcast, but there just is so much to talk about.
Yeah. I almost had this love-hate thing where I was like, I love the style and just like the gritty sort of like camcorder footage.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was almost mad. I was like, why does this work so well? He's just like lazily like... throwing a camera around everywhere and just like talking to people and like
I think he graded it really well, and I think he definitely mixed and mastered it really well.
And I'm saying he definitely was thoughtful and what he just was rolling on like everything, and he was thoughtful about what he was doing. But part of me was almost mad. I was like, all the work we do to light things and
make it get look good
composition and think
for no that's the it. That's what like a good story is over cinematography, over anything.
Yeah.
He just I think that this really is a testament to the editing too. Like,
yeah,
how much more footage is there? And also how, like, I don't know. I think that there could have been a less experienced editor or a less intuitive editor could have really done a bad job with it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think what was cool was, and I think their success of making Through the Wire, the video, by using all the doc footage that they already had, I think that implanted in Cootie's mind, like, oh, that's like a really cool format that works.
Well, it's powerful when people aren't aware of all these years of footage. But also, I mean, I don't know, the format that they used for that video, like, you could still make a video with the same idea with a little green screen, like, Polaroids. Like, it's a pretty cool idea. There's some dated editing effects, but when you watch that video, you're like, it's a pretty cool idea, actually. Oh, yeah. Like,
I kind of think that he was just, like, self-taught. Like, he just started shooting stuff because he didn't have a lot of experience. He just picked up a camera. He didn't know what to do.
Well, remember, he said he was the on-screen talent before he ever picked up a camera and started shooting.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he wasn't, like, a trained cinematographer or anything like that.
Right.
But then he from that started to finesse it and, like, create his own style. And then it was just like, I think he went on, you know, to create some, like, awesome music videos and stuff and definitely learned a lot more.
Yeah.
But still kept that integrity of, like, that same
story
style.
First.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was cool about this doc was that you couldn't do it again. You couldn't replicate it, right? Like, unless someone were to say right now, I'm going to grab my camera and just follow someone around for 20 years.
Yeah, but someone's doing that right now, for sure.
No, there's other example. He mentioned that he was really inspired by Hoop Dreams, which I haven't seen, but I've heard is a really good documentary. It's like following these, like, three big, like, high school basketball players, like, really intimately in there.
Yeah, that's a movie that people talk about all the time. Like, I gotta see it.
Yeah,
Hoop Dreams.
But it's about sports, though.
Yeah, but like you said in the beginning, you know.
You don't have to be super.
You don't have to be into a particular.
Well, it's
thing.
You don't have to be into a particular content story in order to appreciate the goodness.
Film
story
stuff.
We say it every week.
All right. All right, I'm leaving.
And there's there's the intro to the podcast.
There's the intro and the outro.
Jesus forever.
Is this gospel? Invitation is a high road to heaven.
Call up your blessing and the Father of our faith. King of.
I'm just going to finish my magnet sculpture.
Oh, that is a fun one, guys.
Passed out.